Woo! Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And I'm over here feeling inspired on this Tuesday.
Inspired? What's that about?
I'm inspired by, do you know who?
Who?
Conan O'Brien.
Conan O'Brien. That is weird to say on a running podcast.
Conan O'Brien, he's the man. He's hilarious. He's like actually one of my favorite comedians. And he's had such a cool, like long career. But what I'm inspired by actually is his wings eating. So we watched the other night the show Hot Ones where Conan O'Brien was on. And he just goes and smashes wing after wing after wing as they like escalate in Scoville level, which I guess is like the rating, the hot sauce rating. And he is smashing hot stuff and it's not even touching him because it's a bit. And it was like one of the best comedic acts I've ever seen.
Yeah. Everyone go watch it. The Hot Ones episode with Conan O'Brien, because he went in and he just had the idea that as he's doing this interview and eating things that get hotter and hotter. I don't know what a Scoville rating is.
I have no idea, but I was like, you know what? It's 3,500. That's probably a lot.
And it went up to like 500,000.
Oh, it was insane. Yeah, I mean, 3,500, I'd be like shitting my brains out within 2 minutes. And he's like, oh, no, this is good.
Yeah, if this was a wings podcast, I'm sure Scoville rating would be a lot like strides. We would know all about it.
Actually, it's true. You gotta train the ceiling of Scoville rating.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta like, I don't know whether it's like polarized training distribution. Yeah. Or what, but you gotta like push that ceiling sometimes and really go for it.
This isn't threshold training. We want to like really improve the ceiling to improve the floor. So he just went out there with the idea that he was not going to get affected by any of these wings just for the comedy bit. He must have been dying, especially because he's not into hot food, much like I'm not into hot food.
Yeah, he said he had like no background. So he was raised in like an Irish Catholic household and essentially had no background growing up eating spicy food.
No spice, like, not even a single spice, not even oregano in his house. And I thought that commitment to the bit was something I aspire to.
It was so, I mean, actually, I feel like to me, like I've always loved Conan O'Brien, but there was something about that where I was like, this is true creative genius. This man is good, because I feel like it shows like to do what he does, he has to put on a show almost every single night. And there probably is elements of he's like performing through like shit in his life or the equivalent of like his intestines turning to acid and is just rolling through it. And I was like, that's impressive. That is hustle.
Yeah, especially now that I think he's in his 60s.
61.
And, you know, doing that as you age, he's aggressively maintained this open-mindedness that I think like I really aspire to as well, because there's, you know, it's kind of like almost everyone talks about it, that as you get older, you're just closed down, you get calcified in your views and things like that. And I think the only reason he's still one of the funniest people alive is because he is so open to doing incredibly silly things like that. Even once, you know, this guy probably has $150 million and he's going out there for no reason other than to make people laugh.
Well, I feel like turning your like bones and your like innards and organs to acid is probably a great way to remain open. You're like, wow, I'm just like letting it all in. What is your take on spicy foods? Would you do that?
Would I do? Absolutely not.
You would die.
No, I would actually die. Like, not even in a joke way. I think sometimes people assume that, oh, yeah, they're just making jokes about David dying with hot food. But I've had some of the worst experiences of my life with food that's labeled as like mild. So I don't know what would happen to me. Would you do it?
I kind of want to do it now.
It's right now. Like literally right now.
Literally right now. It's like much like the Barkley Marathon. I'm like, I want to feel alive. Yeah. I want to like take this trip and this journey. I want to hallucinate. And so I'm curious. I do think my general take though on hot food is I would much rather, like, I feel like for me when I'm eating a good dish, I want to taste the wholeness of the dish, not just like have it be overwhelmed by a Scoville rating of like, you know, 350,000.
Yeah.
And that's where ketchup comes in. I feel like it's like the perfect conduit of just like elevating the dish as opposed to just like drowning it in acid.
We're giving ourselves away here, Megan.
I know.
You know who likes ketchup?
Leo.
Leo, 18-month-old.
He just like eats spoonfuls of ketchup.
Yeah.
And then he refuses to eat his dinner until we pour more ketchup for him. And I'm like,
and what would happen if we gave him hot food?
Oh.
He would freak out.
He would freak out. Actually, and he has. We have actually, sometimes he like gets a bite of something hot that we have and he's, the look on his face.
Yeah, the look on his face is interesting. And so you slipped something in there as we were talking about Conan O'Brien that I think is going to be really relevant in just a second, which is he has to show up every night, even when some shit might be going on in his life. So do you want to get into the episode and just kick it off with some shit that's going on in your life?
Yeah, I would say we've had just like a slightly, maybe not even slightly, I would call this a fully aggressively shitty week.
Yeah.
But we are here, we are doing it. And we debated, I was like, should we even talk about this on here?
I was on team no, which for me is like, I'm always team yes for everything. Like my life default is to say yes literally across the board, no matter what it is.
Yeah. But I feel like for me, we can't just be like, woohoo, it's Tuesday. Yeah. Fuck yeah. When like my existence is entirely something different. And we will bring that like fuck yeah energy, because honestly, it's how I feel at times in the wake of some of this shittiness. Like a lot of it has been a true mental dumpster fire. But yeah, we can go into it ahead, because I feel like it would be weird to show up and just like pretend.
That being said,
I can't do that.
You did have a little bit more caffeine than usual today.
Oh my God. And that feels so good.
So that woohoo was genuine.
The SIS gel. So there's a SIS gel 200 milligram caffeine that has nootropics in it. And I didn't have that one. I had the 75 milligrams, but you know what? It's hitting good.
I feel like you could take the nootropics science and sport 200 milligram caffeine gel and put it at the bottom of like a rocket launcher and go straight to Mars.
Actually, maybe that's what Conan was doing. He was just putting it in his hot sauce. It was his chaser.
Conan is a cyclist.
That's true.
Did you know that?
Yeah. He was like, I need my carbs. The sauce is lacking carbs.
Okay, so let's get right into this episode. It'll be an interesting one. Maybe we'll talk about fitness returns, cool studies on longevity and athletics, AI bots and athletics, some really interesting food for thought there, a sodium bicarb placebo study that gets into how wild scientific work can be.
Also a nocebo study. I'm obsessed. For some reason, I'm obsessed with the word nocebo. Yeah. I was training yesterday and it was like in my head, I was like nocebo, nocebo, nocebo. It's essentially when you tell someone, instead of it being a placebo, you tell them that it's actually going to have a harmful effect when it's not.
Interesting.
And I think those studies are so cool.
Maybe if we do end up having a child at some point, we can name them Nocebo.
Nocebo.
Nocebo bicarb roach.
That's a good middle name.
Yeah.
Right. They can choose it.
Maybe we'll get to steep climbing today. I doubt it though. Coconona 250 and multi-day ultras, Zwift price increases, and lots more.
I'm so excited for this one. There's actually some of my favorite science of all time is in this episode. So we're going to go into some of the longevity impacts of running and training.
Yeah.
And I feel like, one, it's interesting, just like on an everyday level. I think we get these questions all the time. But two, from an epidemiology standpoint, which is my background, it is spicy. There's some good epidemiology in there.
What's the Scoville rating?
Oh, the Scoville rating? I mean, I wouldn't say it's like 350,000. I'd say it's like 200,000.
Oh, but
I
gotta be honest
in my review.
How is that the best science ever?
Okay. We're talking exercise physiology. I'm not talking cancer biology.
Okay.
You know, I've got to like leave room for curing cancer as like the Scoville rating of like 350,000.
Or leave room perhaps for helping women that are in the midst of slight physiological issues.
Physiological crises.
Okay, so we were going to talk about fitness, but let's just get right into that. So how are you feeling right now? What's going on?
I've been better. We will call this
I
have been better. We'll call this a minor dumpster fire. So Mother's Day was slightly rough for me. I would say this has maybe like one of the worst things that can happen. I mean, there's worse things that can happen on Mother's Day, but I would say this is probably one of them.
Isn't it ironic?
I know.
Don't you think?
As I was going through it, I was like, fuck, the irony.
Yeah.
So on Saturday morning, I woke up and I had some like light cramping and spotting. I'm like 6 weeks pregnant now, almost like heading into the territory of seven. And it scared me a little bit, but like sometimes that's normal in pregnancy. And so I was like, okay, we'll just like wait and see and have a nice chill weekend. And then Mother's Day night started having just like really intense abdominal pain.
Yeah.
And then Monday woke up with slightly more bleeding. Yeah. And so we went in, got an ultrasound and got blood work done. And we're in this really hard state of limbo where I either still have a viable pregnancy or I'm like leaning towards the direction of a miscarriage, or I have an ectopic pregnancy and we won't be able to know for a couple of days. And so just kind of existing within this like stew of emotions. But I would say too, like, as I say that, I think when you stack the statistics, like in order for us to have a viable pregnancy, I feel like it's almost like Alex Honnold, like free soloing the Empire State Building covered in like Nickelodeon slime or something. Like when you start looking at everything and like everything adding up, it doesn't seem very likely, but I feel like I'm still leaving open the possibility of Alex Honnold, who does amazing things.
I'm betting on Alex. I'm betting on nocebo bicarb roach over here. Well, I mean, I'm so proud of you for how you've handled this total shit stew. And I guess too, let's take a step back and just say to listeners out there, like a ton of you have dealt with this either directly or indirectly in your lives. It's never talked about.
It's hard. It's so hard. I mean, this weekend was like so many emotions all at once. But I think what I didn't expect is the uncertainty of this. Like, I mean, I'm a doctor and I've seen women go through this, but I don't think I processed the fact that like, it's, to me, it was binary. Like you either have a miscarriage or you don't, that you don't exist in this Schrodinger state where it's like the embryo has already done its thing inside. And now we have to wait like 5 or 7 days to know more.
Yeah. And so in that context where, you know, this isn't something that's talked about much. We came up this morning and got ready to do the podcast. This is bright and early on Tuesday morning as you're listening to this. And I saw that you decided that we were going to talk about it. I did not think that was a thing we were going to talk about. What's the rationale there?
Well, I think the rationale is just that, like, we talk about everything on this podcast and it's always authentic to us. And that's for me. Like, I don't want to go back and listen to these podcasts and be like, I was performing. I was like playing a character. And this is like my very real lived existence emotionally in my head right now. Yeah. And I don't think I could record an 85-minute podcast and just be like, yeah, we're good. Definitely, we got this, when that's not the reality that I'm going through. And I thought about it too. There's a very different, for me, like a very different distinction between like this podcast, and I'm not going to go like post it on Instagram, but I feel like this podcast, this community is like family to us too. And I've already told like a small number of like family and friends, and that support has been like super helpful. And so it's this really interesting place to exist.
I'm so proud of you. I mean, you know, you do all this stuff for female athlete health and physiology, and what more could you do than try to, you know, show people that it's okay to talk about the shit while you're going through the shit, not just after you've processed it? Because that's the hardest part here, is like, neither of us have processed it.
No, we're not even close.
It's infinitely harder for you in every sense, because something's going on inside your body right now, which actually could be scary for your health too. And that's what like is making me scared right now. Like, as we talked about on distant past episodes, where like, after Leo was born and you were okay, that was the moment for me where I started crying. And now, like, you know, I'm just worried, you know, I'm worried about you more than anything. And so, yeah.
I'm sad, but I'm actually not worried. I have this feeling that, like, you know what, I think for me, like, this was a surprise pregnancy, and I don't think it makes it any easier it's still extremely, extraordinarily hard, but I'm kind of in this place where I'm peaceful about it, but I'm also like, I'm going to go up and run Mount St. Anita's this weekend. Okay. I'm like scheming up some plans and dreams and races. And there is so much like goodness in life. Yeah. And I want to tap into that in other areas that I was frankly going to miss out on while being pregnant. And so I am excited for that. And then also holding space for being like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah. You want to tap that?
I do.
Tap that excitement.
I want to like bang that, but maybe with like a condom on or something. Yeah, let's bang that very, very carefully.
Where would you even get condoms?
Where do you get condoms? I don't know. You probably DoorDash condoms these days.
Probably DoorDash condoms.
I mean, I'm sure they actually do that.
We haven't gotten condoms since DoorDash existed.
I mean, it's been a long time.
Oh my God, this is gonna be great. You could Uber Eats condoms. You could get condoms, Pepto-Bismol, and a burrito.
And no, this is what you do. You got to get all of those and a pregnancy test. It's like, what are the weird things that you buy when you get a pregnancy test? And it's all of those.
So I think the only way this podcast could be more genuine to you is if the YouTube video for Jim Walmsley that just came out was joining us, because every single time I came up to check on you, see how you were doing in bed, you were doing a lot of bed rest, you'd be watching the Walmsley YouTube video.
Yeah, actually, my bed rest lasted for like 3 hours because I got so excited. I was like, I'm going to eat pancakes in bed and watch the Jim Walmsley documentary, which was so good. If you haven't tuned into it, I feel like it shows some good old mountain porn. It's like the Alps are stunning. And it was actually really helpful as I was going through this and having this layer of uncertainty, being like, oh, I'm going to just go play in the Alps. Yeah. Like, it's beautiful there.
And in that video, Walmsley, I mean, he just gave himself to some long-term processes. Like, it's so beautiful.
Well, actually, I feel like for me, like, Walmsley is the GOAT. Yeah. And in my head, I'm like, oh, he's just the GOAT. He wins everything. And I feel like this documentary distilled the idea that like, we all go through a number of big failures and then have to line back up again. And he did that so many times. Like, it's not like he just like won UTMB or won Western States. He had like failure and failure and wrong turn and like stomach implosion. And then he won.
Yeah. I was going to make, I should probably avoid my jokes.
Oh, go for it. Take a swing.
A miscarriage of root finding at Western States in 2017. An ectopic pregnancy of DNF.
Oh, that's a bad one. That one might end you in the hospital.
Yeah. So we're sending love to everybody. And I don't know, I'm just so proud of you for like how you've dealt with it. Like the uncertainty, everything else, like anything else helping you get through this process? Like what are you thinking right now in the midst of it?
Okay. Final weird thing is I love poetry and I decided, I was like, I'm going to write a poem every day for 7 days. And this was like,
write or read?
Both. Well, write. So I like,
whoa, I didn't realize that.
I know, it's because I've been awake at night having pain. And so I'm like, I'm just going to like write poetry while you're there and you have sleep apnea, which is how you like generate your red blood cells. So I'm just like sitting there writing poetry and you're like asphyxiating yourself.
Oh Megan, I've given you like 4 back.
I know, you've been amazing, but I have been writing poetry as you sit there with your like sleep apnea situation. And it's been really, really helpful. Actually, it's been amazing.
Okay. That's beautiful. Are you going to read any of those poems?
Well, I wrote one. about miscarriage. And I was like, oh, I probably should not read that one.
Yeah, it's backseat windows up. That's not actually good. You should get a condom first and then you can pop.
Exactly. But I think I wanted to end this by just reading a poem for anyone that's going through really hard stuff.
Yeah.
And I actually believe we've read this before, like 150 episodes ago.
Yeah.
But I feel like poems only get better the more you read them. So I'm pulling up my phone.
So Megan's going to bring it up. I am not sure what this one is. So I'm excited.
I don't like poetry. Don't read it.
Please be ludicrous.
Yeah.
That joke would just land so hard, Megan.
Okay. It's called Good Bones by Maggie Smith. And you probably remember this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Life is short, though I keep this from my children. Life is short, and I've shortened mine in 1,000 delicious, ill-advised ways. 1,000 deliciously ill-advised ways I keep from my children. The world is at least 50% terrible, and that's a conservative estimate, though I keep this from my children. For every bird, there is a stone thrown at a bird. For every loved child, a child broken, bagged, sunk in a lake. Life is short, and the world is at least half terrible. And for every kind stranger, there is one who would break you, though I keep this from my children. I am trying to sell them the world. Any decent realtor walking you through a real shithole chirps on about good bones. This place could be beautiful, right? You could make this place beautiful.
Mm.
And I don't know. I feel like that resonates a lot with me when stuff is objectively shitty is, you know, you just got to ride it out and think about some good bones.
Yeah. Well, I'm so proud of you, Megan. Just here for it. We'll know more. I mean, nothing's certain yet.
Yeah. And I know. Now we wait.
You have lots more to be stuck up your situation.
I know. I'm like kind of used to it at this point. They're like, this whole wand is going up there. You're like,
I can't even look. I just, I stay distant in those rooms. Fortunately, the rooms are pretty dark usually.
Yeah.
So I can just like sit in the corner and like, you know, take myself and think about baseball or something.
But actually getting back to the poem Good Bones, I'm actually excited to strength train. Yeah. Like that is something I'm looking forward to if this doesn't work out.
Literal good bones.
Yeah. I'm like, I want to feel strong. And pregnancy is legitimately like a bone suck. And I'm like, it's going to be time to deadlift again. Living lifts. That's what we should call them.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Maybe it's because when you go through this, your brain does go to like all of the things you've done. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but I deadlifted on Wednesday. Maybe like that wasn't good. It's like, no, Megan, like it's probably a chromosomal issue. Yeah. But it's funny how your brain does that mental gymnastics.
I mean, Megan, you deadlifted like 8 feathers. Yeah. I don't think that's something. I gave you a hard time about this, about plyometrics last week.
I know. And you know what? I didn't even do the plyometrics. Yeah. I was like, maybe this jumping right now is not a good idea in early pregnancy.
I don't know. I was thinking of a good comparison for what your plyometrics are.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back to Dance Dance Revolution.
Oh, that's so true.
That's very similar to what you do. It's just like anybody jumps.
Okay. But I'm sure Dance Dance Revolution, as you're like smashing your feet into the, I did mine on cement floor.
Oh, yeah.
In our basement, it's there actually probably good for good bones.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough though that your brain ties everything back that you're going through to every action that you took. Like throughout the process, I even remember you saying, was it because I was stressed about it that it got worse? And I'm like, I don't think that's the way it works, Megan. But even you as a doctor, you know, you're experiencing those concerns. And, you know, it's just seeing you go through it, so damn inspirational. And I'd love to hear some of your poetry.
My poetry?
Yeah.
Maybe I should just read The Scorcher right now. We can take it out or we can leave it in. But I think we'll hold on that one. I like to put some humor. Actually, the first poem, I'm on day 2.
Yeah.
The first poem that I wrote it and I looked back on it and I was like, that is extremely sexual.
Oh.
But it wasn't my intent. Yeah. And I feel like it like really reveals my deep subconscious is just like, fuck.
Yeah. Well, there's such a great chance for a joke here. You're like, I'm going to start reading my poetry. And then you get really close to the mic and be like, I'm on a boat, motherfuckers. Don't you ever forget.
That is
like,
your
straight Lonely Island.
That's the poetry that you read over and over and over again.
Yes. Okay. You okay moving on?
Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna drop that. We're going to bag that up and put it in a lake, much like she said in the poem.
Much like we said.
Not that. The overall topic.
Like, that sounds like a murder.
Oh, no. I meant the topic. So people can move on.
Perfect. And we won't reference back to it besides maybe like the body bags in the lake.
Oh, no. The best thing there was going from deadlifts to very live, alive lifts. I don't think it's okay to talk about my training right now.
Let's definitely talk about your training. You're crushing it.
Okay. Well, first, I did want to read. So quick transition.
Are you going to read a poem?
Well, it's kind of a poem. It's the EMT report. So the ambulance report that came from my accident. Just to give you an official final rundown of what happened. Arrived on scene and greeted by bystander who reports male, that's me, I'm male, was traveling across an intersection when he was T-boned by a vehicle turning at approximately 10 miles per hour. He reports, Male was that's me. I'm the male. Was ejected from bike, traveling approximately 100 feet, striking his head on a metal fence. I thought it was pretty cool.
That's pretty epic.
Yeah.
She was only driving 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
She needs to level up her driving game.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That like turn that's was taken pretty slow.
Like that's a weak sauce turn.
And that's something I do remember from it. It's just like it was all happening so quickly, but also so slowly.
You're like, why is this car driving 10 miles an hour?
It was like a precision strike by a missile that was moving like a turtle. That's what it felt like. So, you know, we've talked on here a lot about how it was so hard coming back and I had so many health issues and just difficult. But now we're a little over 5.5 weeks out of that event and my body's feeling really good. And it gets back to some of what you were talking about. When you zoom out with time, like a lot of interesting things can happen in the body and my fitness has returned mostly to where it was, still not quite there. But I think it's also just a good reflection of when the body goes through things, the rapidity with which it comes back always is much more, it's more stunning. It's so stunning compared to my expectations.
Well, I feel like for me, what I take away too is like the body is so complex. And when things work to recover in this way, it's like, whoa, that's beautiful. That's really cool. And it's been fun to see you crushing it out there and to see the fire come back on athletically. Are you planning, can I ask this?
Yeah.
Are you planning like races and goals ahead?
I mean, kind of. The situation, I'm referring back to it. Everything's up in the air right now.
Yeah.
We're kind of waiting to see because I was thinking about racing at Leadville, but if you can't travel up there for training trips.
I can for sure travel up there either way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know though.
I mean, if this thing survives, it's going to go to like Everest. I mean, this is like the most like endurance-based fetus embryo like ever. So,
So
I feel like we will be going to Leadville, so you should plan on it.
I was thinking of going that path. I also think, I don't think the course record's out of reach at Leadville. I know that's insane to say, but I do think it's reasonable for someone to get. And why not me?
And your hemoglobin's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Partially because you have like...
hey.
Partially because when you sleep at night, I can hear it. I can hear the process of red blood cells being made.
But I do have genetic abnormalities that help me with red blood cells. So altitude doesn't affect me like it does other people for the most part. So I don't know. I think that could be a good path, but we'll see. A lot of training to go, but right now I'm just enjoying getting to train and feeling okay. So I'm really excited. I mean, to go from getting launched 100 feet to that, it's just, I wanted to share it because I think it's a reflection to everybody that when the body goes through shit, sometimes it feels so far away. Like I made comments on this podcast about how I have to go through a full 7-season run of a TV show on the uphill treadmill to get my fitness back, like I did this winter. And what I found is the fitness is much stickier, as I would have told
you. What you found is it just took, 8 episodes of Three Body Problem to come back?
Yeah, the Three Body Problem. My fitness was rocking and rolling. Much different vibes than New Girl, but I ended up loving it. It was awesome. And I felt pretty good. So,
where does the name Three Body Problem come from? Do you know?
Yeah. I might give away part of, maybe not. So it's the science fiction book on which it's based by a Chinese author. And the Three Body Problem refers to the home planet of the aliens, which isn't too much of a giveaway because that's in the description, that has multiple orbiting bodies and it causes chaotic errors at their home planet. That's why they have to leave their planet.
Oh, very cool. I thought it was going to be like human-based body problems. I was like, I got 99 body problems.
I got 99 body problems, but like, I don't know, a fetus might not be one.
Yeah, exactly. That is like my medical diagnosis right now.
I landed that plane.
But I really like that it's based on astronomy. That makes me feel much better about the show.
Oh, it is so science fiction based. In fact, I haven't read the books, but I hear that they're even more science fiction based, like too much. And that's why people thought they couldn't be adapted.
There is such thing as too much science fiction based?
Well, too much to show on TV because it would all be exposition and explanations of like orbital mechanics and stuff, which I'm really into, but maybe not the average Netflix watcher.
I know. I watch like the Walmsley documentary for the exposition. Like, show me the Alps.
I want to see his orbital body.
Yeah. Okay. Do you?
What's that? Do I?
Yeah.
I mean, what is that other than watching a lot of Jim Walmsley's body move over mountains?
So I know, right?
It's not sexual, but like do like watching it quite a lot. Okay, let's go on to longevity and athletics. Before we do that, you know what we wanted to promote? The feed. One thing I've been finding on the treadmill that's been so, so helpful, and I think this applies to everyone's workout, is having a caffeinated gel with you. Megan mentioned the Science and Sport 75 milligrams. That's only because we ran out of the Precision 100 milligrams and they're all sold out right now.
I know. Did we sell them out?
I think we might have.
We are so big on those. And
we mentioned on Patreon, we were just like talking all about how we use the 100 gels strategically to launch performance. And yes, they are sold out now. So we want those, the Precision 100 milligram caffeinated gels, but the Science and Sport 75s are okay. I mean, I don't love the taste.
I know. I actually, you were telling me, you're like, this is going to be a terrible taste. Yeah. And it honestly wasn't that bad. So I disagree with you on that, but I did just brush my teeth. And so I'm like, maybe I'm being colored by that. It was not the most amazing thing in the world.
Just not for me, but they get the job done.
They're very fluid though.
Yeah.
Like they do actually feel like you're drinking like pure liquid as you taste them, which is nice. Like it has less of a viscous taste.
Pure liquid with some weird sweetener going on. Like, I just don't understand. Like Science and Sport Beta Fuel gels are amazing.
So good. I love those, especially the neutral ones. I'm never like, my personality is not neutral at all. I'm like, give me the strongest watermelon flavor straight to my cells.
Yeah.
But you know what? The neutral is tickling my soul.
The Scoville rating is -100,000.
I know. I'm like, I want the Scoville rating, the big Scoville rating for life.
Yeah. It is actually interesting to think about Scoville rating. I remember those old things called hot shots that I think are still around.
Oh yeah. The ones that you take to prevent cramps.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have them on the feed. They probably do.
And I do think they have like capsaicin or something like that that's a little bit hot in there because of some nervous system theory.
Well, the theory is that like if you pucker that, and I guess like hot, like capsaicin would make you pucker, that it helps the neuromuscular stimulus to avoid and to like, you know, prevent cramps.
Maybe it requires your anus to pucker. Yes. how I deal with heat.
Actually, I mean, there is, my brain is going to some possible physiology in which that could be true. Have you ever had an athlete just like vomit and then their cramps go away?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time. So who knows? We don't really understand this world. But on the feed, you can get all of these things. And the reason I was mentioning it is on the treadmill, I have all this data. And so as I'm building back and I'm monitoring this data so closely with heart rate to pace ratios in a really controlled setting, what I see is that if I have a caffeinated gel, like half of one after the warm-up and then half of one midway through the workout, my heart rate response is so much more stable. And, you know, I think it's one of those little things that if you're doing that and you're improving your workout just a little bit, it also improves your recovery just a little bit. So fueling isn't only on the long events, but also on your harder workouts, consider having it. So thefeed.com/swap, SWAP. There, if you click claim reward, you get $80 in free credit. You also get a water bottle with our like logo on it, which is pretty cool. Can't recommend it enough. We love this company.
Also, I do love fueling workout efforts because it's almost like for me, it's a different part of the workout. It's like, especially if you're on the treadmill, it's the equivalent of like getting to this, like this landmark outside. You're like, I'm going to my favorite tree, but instead of your favorite tree, you're just taking a gel. And for me, it is about the recovery context and the calories and sometimes the caffeine, but it's also just like, it changes the context up and it's something to look forward to. Yeah. And I think my moral of the story is find a fueling product that you look forward to.
And if you get beat up by hard workouts, that might be the main place to think about it. It's not even in the performance, but how you feel after. When athletes on Patreon have messaged us about this type of thing, they'll say, I used to think I couldn't do workouts because I would get so sore and tired and just feel like I was in a boxing match. And now they don't have that feeling anymore. So there's a huge opportunity there. Thefeed.com/swap, SWAP. Okay. You want to go on to longevity and athletics?
I've been waiting for this. I'm so excited. Okay. These are good studies.
Okay. So the reason we want to mention this, we get so many messages about, is running healthy? And then links to old TEDx talks from 10 years ago. There was one that was given about, you know, serious athletics not being good for hearts. And there are people out there that have staked their claim on athletics not being that good for people.
There are many people out there about this. And actually, even like many doctors, the number of times that I've had athletes go to doctors and they're like, you're going to ruin your knees forever. Or like, you're going to die young.
Especially your heart. You know?
Yeah. And it is kind of wild because these data just like don't show that.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to dive into this to kind of, I mean, and I wouldn't call it perfect data, but I'm excited to dive into it just because I feel like when I saw this, it put a smile on my face just thinking about the context of training and longevity.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about heart health and running, and we can link to that episode. But basically, there's a theory that there's a U-shaped curve where some athletics is really good. And then maybe if you overdo it, it might be a little bit less good, but it's still better than doing nothing. Those types of things, it's relatively settled. But we're a little bit unsure of the end of the curve. So like we understand there might be a U, but there's not enough data points usually to see, okay, is going really far on athletics or really pushing it. Does that have detrimental effects? And that's where these quack doctors jump in. And I'm going to call them quacks because I think the science just doesn't back it up, that say, okay, this amount of athletics won't be good for your heart. And it's led to a lot of people, especially people that grew up in the previous generation, thinking they're doing these sports and thinking that they're causing themselves long-term health issues as a result, but they do it anyway because they love it. And I worry about all the people that fall off the wagon because they're concerned about the things that these doctors might be telling them.
And I see it all the time in training logs of athletes who are like, my family thinks this is unhealthy. And it is curious to me, like, if you have a body of supporters that are telling you that, how much harder it can be to get out the door and to have the motivation to go and train. Whereas like take that athlete and put them in a different context where like the people that are closest to them are like, yo, this is cool. This is fun. This is probably healthy. And like, how does that impact motivation levels? And I mean, I feel like anecdotally, I see that shift in motivation all the time.
Yeah. So the problem is, how do you even measure this stuff? There aren't that many data points and it's really difficult. So these studies kind of took an ingenious design epidemiologically. Still can't say that word.
Oh, I can like, it took me a while. It took me like 2 years into my PhD and now I can just roll it off and be like epidemiologically.
Oh my God.
I've had a lot of practice.
I was hoping you would
say that. I was going to say, I was going to fuck it up.
It would have been so good.
I mean, I fucked it up a number of times. So.
Okay. So this first one just came out in the British Journal of Sports Medicine and it has a wonderful title. Outrunning the Grim Reaper, longevity of the first 200 sub-4-minute mile male runners. I just love that title, Outrunning the Grim Reaper, right in it.
It's a great title. Sometimes you just got to put a little bit of like dramatic flair in there. Yeah. And also, I think this is a really cool. So essentially, they took a database of the first sub-4-minute milers, and there's 200 of them. And so these are like early, like we've had, actually, I have to look at the number now, but we've had
thousands,
many thousands.
I mean, in the NCAA now, the sub-4-minute mile doesn't even get you to NCAA finals or NCAA like to qualify for regionals because there's so many people running that time.
And that's come from like advances in spikes and performance and training theory and how we kind of like put all of that together in a performance stew. But essentially they took these first 200 athletes and compiled this data set of their health and then went on to study their longevity. And I think it's just so cool. Like of all the cohorts you could put together, this is a really cool group to look at, especially because like they're kind of pioneers in doing this as well. I think some of the challenges are when you study these athletes is the characteristics of who they are probably quite different from the general population. Like you would think that if someone does run a 4-minute mile, even if they don't run later in life, they probably have healthier habits in terms of like smoking and nutrition and lifestyle
or
and
just
sleep.
Genetics.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the genetics to run a sub-4-minute mile probably correlate with maybe a predisposition to better longevity overall.
In fact, people are studying the genetics. There's a whole study at Stanford called the Elite Study where they're taking athletes with the specific like VO2 max threshold and doing full sequencing on them to understand their genetics with a theory that maybe there's something there that we can actually like take to harness and help human health is like maybe there's an outlier and something that we can modify genetically.
That sounds like something that would be at the start of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, right?
You know, because as soon as we're able to isolate that stuff and then
the exposition.
We're about to talk about AI and how that's being used in some specific ways. You get a big enough database, you plug that into a big enough supercomputer with enough compute process. What are you going to find on the other end of optimizing human like physiology, longevity, things like that? And the answer in my sci-fi world is you're going to find some rapidly mutating disease and then the chimps are going to take over the world, Megan. This is going to be Planet of the Apes.
Oh, that's hilarious. Also, I think you're going to find the Ingebrigtsen brothers. I can say epidemiologically, but Ingebrigtsen, I'm like, oh, I need some more practice on that.
Yeah.
There's three Ingebrigtsen brothers that have gone sub-4-minute miles and it makes you think about the idea of like, okay, what component of this is actually genetic.
Yeah. I mean, huge in all athletics, you know, but genetics aren't everything. And behavior is a ton because they were being trained by their father, who actually seems quite abusive from a very, very young age. Some really bad articles have come out recently about him and things he's done.
Which is quite sad. I can't imagine being in that place.
Yeah. No, it's so terrible. Okay. So let's get to the results of the study. Of the 200 athletes, 60 of them have died. And with of those athletes, they have been 4.7 years over the predicted life expectancy.
And what I think is interesting actually is when you account for the decade of completing the sub-4-minute mile. So they looked at this in the 1950s, 1960s, and 1970s based off of the fact that these were the first 200, and again, male athletes. Yeah. And what they found actually was that the longevity benefits were stacked earlier on. So if they completed it in the 1950s, the longevity benefits were plus 9.2 years. And then in the 1960s, it was 5.5 years and then 2.9 years in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And the theory there is that like we've gotten a lot better medically at detecting diseases. And you would think that if the lifespan gets better, it's harder to essentially like to optimize the top of that. And so that's why we kind of see the results shifted based off of decade of completion.
I wonder if that could also just be that if you complete it later, you're by definition, if you have died, you are not living as long.
Exactly. Yes. That is also true. There's a number of different reasons for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I also think that that's actually interesting to think about with life expectancy has decreased a little bit after COVID for the first time in the United States for in a very, very long time. I wonder if some of these, you know, effects might even be more pronounced now that, you know, you have these morbidity causes that are unique historically. So, I mean, basically, this is a pretty simply designed study, I think. You can do this across a bunch of different types of athletics.
And they have, which is actually really important too, because if you think about this, training for a sub 4 minute mile actually looks wildly different than ultra training. So they estimated that these athletes on average were training like 9 to 12 hours per week. But you look at someone like, look at athletes that we've talked about on here, like Jim Walmsley training and Killian's training and Katie Scheid's training. Some of the time, and even like, think about triathletes who are training like 30 or 40 hours a week. And to me, that's a totally different cohort or group of athletes than, you know, sub 4 minute milers.
You know what's funny about that? I've only done a handful of weeks over 12 hours in my entire life.
Same. Yeah.
You know, it's always interesting to think about how different approaches work, because like SWAP in general, we have some athletes doing really high volume. Usually they're doing that through a lot of cross training, like cycling. But even then, like 12 hours for me, that's over a way over 100 miles a week. And I don't do that very often at all. So I hope I'd be caught in this data set.
Well, actually, this is what I was thinking, is that in coaching, I hope that we're the coaches in sport that actually add life onto yours as opposed to taking it away.
Interesting.
I know, we're like optimizing athletic longevity and life longevity. We should put that as like a tagline on our website. Like, we care about your health.
Yeah. I mean, that would be actually really interesting, is in like, you know, 50 years evaluating like lifespans. I don't know though. It might be a little bit sketchy to do that by coaching groups.
I know, by who we have in our group. Okay, the final point on this particular study is, you would also think that if someone has achieved a sub 4 minute miler, that they're also probably in this category of like elevated socioeconomic status or elevated life status.
Because of the status it gave them at the time when no one did it.
Yeah, exactly. And you would think that, okay, maybe because they are in this group, that they're more prone to getting like diagnostic testing, and they're taking care of their bodies and they have better resources. But they actually compared this group to an Olympic group of like multiple different sports. Yeah. And they found that the longevity in that group didn't hold in the same way. And so there might be some features that are specific to like endurance based athletes.
Okay. Well, that's really hopeful. And it brings us to the next study, which was in the International Journal of Sports Medicine. This one's a bit older. It's about 10 years old. And it was called Increased Average Longevity Among Tour de France Cyclists. They looked at 834 athletes who completed the Tour de France between 1930 and 1964. Really relevant, because Tour de France training is not like mile training. This is big old boss training.
Yeah, that's why I was excited to see this, because I was like, as I was reading the British Journal of Sports Medicine article, I was like, okay, but show me the athletes that train like 20 or 30 hours per week, because that to me, I feel like, is if there were to be a U-shaped curve, is where we would start to see it. And that's these athletes.
Yeah. And when you think about the history of the Tour de France, I have read some stuff. I think a lot of the times people are like, oh, well, doping didn't really start till the late 80s and 90s. Like in the 80s, there were steroids. In the 90s, there was EPO and things like that in the Tour de France. And so maybe that changes the data. But even back in the day, they were doing insane shit. Yeah. Like, these people were taking
probably
cocaine.
Even, like, wild. Like, yeah.
Just to go a little bit faster. A lot of things were happening. But the money finding here was that the age at which 50% of the general population died was 73.5 years versus 81.5 years in the Tour de France participants. So that's like an 8-year increase at the median level.
And a 17% increase in lifespan, if you do the math on it, which is quite a lot. I would say it's curious though, because if you look at the demographics, like 1930s to 1964s, that's like in the space of the last study where we're really seeing big effects in like the 1950s and 1960s, and then they start to slow in the 1970s. And so I think this is outsized in terms of like the effect size of what we would see today, but it still shows a huge benefit.
And it works not harm.
Yes.
Right? Like as the authors of this study said, I actually thought it was a very cute little sentence in their findings. Our findings underpin the importance of exercising without the fear that becoming exhausted might be bad for one's health.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good, because, you know, when you're doing athletics, a lot of times it does feel hard. And part of you might be like, is this actually good for me? Or is this okay for me?
I've had so many times post long run where I'm just like kind of conked out in bed being like, how am I going to be a parent today when Leo wakes up from his nap? And it is actually like, it's almost like these findings are a warm hug of like, no, it's okay. And like, honestly, stressing the body prepares you for the stress of like, you know, if you suffer from illness later on or have to fight like hard health related things.
Yeah. I mean, your body's been through a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And so as you're going through a lot right now, it's maybe one reason that physically I'm worried about you. Like, I'm worried about your health, right?
But
you don't
seem that worried
about it. And I feel like
I'm going to go run Cetus.
Oh man, I'm I'm so proud of you, Megan.
Thank you. Well, actually, as we were reviewing these studies, I was thinking about the fact that these are all male-centric studies.
Yeah.
And I do think that we see it simply because like women weren't competing in the Tour de France in the 1930s. Yeah. And you need a longer time span to be able to study this. But I do think we see the same thing in women. And before I had my little issue this week,
yeah,
I was thinking about too, I think there is a lot of talk about exercise on fertility.
Yeah.
And I would love to see studies similar to this design, looking at fertility and fertility outcomes. And there are some, and largely, like, I feel like if you're fueling your body,
yeah,
and being smart with exercise, I do see for a lot of athletes that fertility is kind of unchanged in that period.
Yeah. And there's some interesting work being done there, but it's hard because, as you said, it's very easy to tie any behavior you do to outcomes in this process because you don't control any of it. And when we don't control anything in life, sometimes we try to find things that we do, kind of like I have superstitions about the most random things that I've had to consciously break. Like, it doesn't matter if it's this exact pair of socks or whatever. But the only reason I ever thought that is because, well, if you don't control anything, maybe you can control something.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's very well said. Well, actually, it brings me back to Canyon's 100K. And, you know, as I'm sitting here going through this, like, you could, yeah, be like, oh, there was like a chromosome abnormality all along. I should have raced Canyon's 100K. But I think to me, it's like, if I had done that race, I do think I would have like correlated it in my brain when maybe that wasn't like the outstanding reason. And also maybe too, this was saving me from something terrible happening at Canyons. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. We can have superstition in both directions.
I know, right? Exactly. Yeah. We can use it in a positive light.
Yeah. Exactly.
We can mold it and craft it.
God bless the broken road. Save my heart from you. Okay. So we talked about the complications there. I do think the female athlete stuff needs to be controlled for, as does the lack of a comparison to moderate exercise controls.
Yes.
This could still be seeing some of a U-shaped curve, but without the full U, you know, like it might not drop fully down to baseline, but there still might be an optimal level that we're not measuring in these studies. But I think overall, this is just a warm hug to just be like, hey, have fun, live your life. Don't worry about like stressing your body as long as it's not with like toxic substances. And enjoy the time you have.
I love that. Go out there and have some adventures in the Alps like Jim Walmsley.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe with like, yeah, maybe if you're not Jim Walmsley, like dialing back the training slightly from, yes, that Walmsley level.
And make sure you fuel plenty. I think that's a super key for everybody. All right, on to AI and coaching. Do you want to do this topic now?
I do, okay, actually. So you sent me, so this is Motivated from the Hard Work podcast.
Yes.
Which I listened to. I was having kind of a rough day yesterday.
I gave you a homework assignment.
I know. You're like, go downstairs. Well, I was going to elliptical.
Yeah.
You were kind of neutral on that. And you're like, listen to the Hard Work podcast. And it was so good.
Okay.
It took me out of my own head. And so it was, we're going to get into it.
It is so good. So the Hard Fork podcast is a tech podcast. I listen to it every week. They're just like friends to me. They're so cool and so interesting. But
actually, very similar vibes to this podcast,
yeah,
where they were doing what was an intro. And I was like, where, like,
yeah,
like plot me, orient me in time and space. And I feel like that's a lot of our podcasts. You just like, yeah, get popped into Conan O'Brien's wings in the, yeah, first 30 seconds.
Someone messaged on Patreon, I'm not going to give away their name, yesterday, and they said, you know, I'm so glad I stuck with it because the very first one I listened to, I turned it off because like a minute or two in, there was a digression about vaginas that they went into.
In a minute we did that?
I mean, Megan, we're capable of a lot. We are strong, powerful.
Labias.
Yeah. Oh man, someone told me another word within that area I should be using more often.
That you should be using more often?
Yeah, yeah.
Clitoris? Because, that's, no, we should all be using that more often.
We use clitoris sometimes. What are other words down there? Pop quiz.
Cervix, uterus, fallopian tubes.
Something more external.
More external? Labia.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be
labia, okay, minora, labia majora. I'm like, Megan, anatomy brain.
Yeah, need to kick off everybody that might not want to listen to the full thing. Actually, hey, subscribe to Patreon. We do bonus podcasts there every week. We actually talked a little bit about this, teed it up last week. So patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. Also do bonus posts, bonus everything. Last week it was on Norwegian training. It's where all of our content goes. So join us on Patreon.
And we have episode 100 coming up this week. So we decided, we actually realized like 29 minutes into the episode that we were at episode 100.
Yeah.
So we called it episode 99.5 because we want to do a true episode 100 celebration. So that's coming up.
Yes. And so with the Hard Fork podcast, I listened to it on my run on Friday, and I was out there laughing so hard on the trail that I had to stop and go hands on knees. So it's a very funny podcast, but it's not the design. Like, we really try to be like, you know, underscore humor. And I actually think they do. It's very similar to us.
Oh, they're funnier than us. I don't know what you're talking about. They're probably better than we are.
No, I haven't heard them mention labias once. Yeah. On there.
So, well, it's two males. You really need a female in the room to mention labias. So we have gender diversity.
That's not true at all, Megan. Yeah. If I was solo talking into this mic, there would be all labia talk. It would be called the Labia Podcast.
I know, but that's a problem. The context matters.
Hey, I wouldn't have a ton of listeners. I might be reported. Yeah. But hey, that's what it would be. Because I'm trying to uplift anatomy talk. Okay, so on the episode, it was all about AI personas. So Kevin Roos, one of the hosts, created 18 different personas from different websites that allow you to essentially generate backstories for these things that you can chat with, talk with. It incorporates all of the things about AI we've been chatting about and use them to have a discussion on the podcast of what his takeaways were after 30 days.
And it was kind of interesting. So he created, so using AI and 18 AI friends, and they were essentially becoming, so he would give them backstories to the point that like they were not true backstories. It was like, I went to college with you. And so it provided some context for the conversations he was having with the AI bots. 18 is a lot. Yeah. I was thinking about it and like, I don't love text messaging. Like if I text message you consistently, you are a very good friend to me. And I can't imagine consistently messaging with 18 AI bots. That's a lot.
Oh, Megan, what if they got freaky?
Yeah. Oh, that's, and they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, which I feel like was an interesting point in the conversation was most of the conversations, and actually I feel like this is a specific nuance to this chatbot. What was the company called again?
I forget, but I think just in generally chatbots across the board, they're kind of optimized for these types of processes because like to get people to come back, a lot of the times they're going to go to erotic places, even when you tell them to be a little bit careful with doing that, if they have the capabilities, because they learn from human communication. And guess what? When human communication is unfiltered and no one knows about it, it's going to go to erotic places a lot more than people talk about.
It's like my subconscious in the first poem I wrote, where I wrote it. And then like 2 hours later, I was like, that is deeply sexual. And I did not mean that.
Maybe at the end of the podcast, I can read it and maybe it'll be plugged in.
Hey, no, not that one. That one isn't, the first one's embarrassing. We can read, the second one is like a little scorcher.
Okay. Okay. Maybe at the very, 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 very end of the podcast, either that or you're going to get some David NPR voices where I'm just saying labia over and over. So stick around, user's choice.
But I think the erotic nature is interesting because either that's like deeply encoded in, so like essentially AI chatbots are neural networks.
Yeah.
And it's either deeply encoded in the basis of neural networks, which I think it is to some extent. But I also think it is this place of company decision-making of if you reach an erotic status, your users that are talking to the AI bots are probably going to come back and use this product more. And so I'm curious, like what percentage, if you break it down, is based off of like encoded within neural networks versus this is a business decision. Like this is actually, and to allow it is a business decision.
Oh, definitely. Because, you know, ChatGPT doesn't do that. You can't get ChatGPT to get freaky no matter what.
You tried?
I mean, anyone can try. It doesn't do anything. They've really neutered a lot of the big public ones.
That's Gemini, a great word choice.
Yeah. I mean, just like in, you know, both literally and figuratively to a certain extent. And I think that's good. Like, you know, you don't want these things getting freaky, especially when, you know, children can use it. But I think what's interesting about this is when you listen to this episode, I think there's a pressing feeling that I have that you're like, oh, fuck. This is going to change everything about human communication. Because I think when we think about AI, we can understand that it's going to be able to know how to do, you know, brain-driven processes about as well as almost any human, and it's going to know across fields. That's pretty obvious. Even if we don't reach like true artificial general intelligence as described by like the apocalypse people, we're going to reach a point where every job needs to be worried about it. But where I never really put two and two together is like, oh, well, if you have that information and you plug it into something that can speak well, and ChatGPT just yesterday after this episode came out, released something that can do translations instantly, that can put emotion into voices, that can do all these things, you're essentially going to, I think, replace a lot of humanity's role in certain human-to-human interactions, because all of us humans have such limitations on what we can do, whereas these bots don't. And so this has been predicted in, you know, science fiction forever. The movie Her by, I think, Spike Jones was great on this topic. And clearly this is coming for us all in ways that we just need to think about, especially as it relates to our jobs. And so here we're talking a little bit about athletics in a few minutes. But I think wherever you work, make sure you pay attention to this field, because I think there's skeptics out there, and those skeptics are burying their head in the sand because if I was a 14-year-old, it wouldn't be the erotic parts I want. It'd be the parts where I can talk about existence with someone that isn't going to judge me.
I know, but it starts by talking about existence. Then it all gets erotic. That's how you get in, and then you stay in by it being erotic.
Well, I also just think, what is human connection other than there is an eroticism to deep human connection in the
that's
sense
fair.
That
yes,
you're making yourself truly vulnerable mm-hmm. on an emotional sense, and then maybe people masturbate at the end. Yeah. I don't know. They send pictures too. It's wild.
I know, it is pretty wild. I think for me, there are like salient pros in this situation, but I'm also like, I'm not a skeptic burying my head in the sand, but I do think I'm a skeptic on this. And I mean, I feel like when you look at the use cases of this, like they gave some examples of when this could be a pro of like having, so if you have this bot in your life and you're afraid to open up to someone about a very specific topic, you can talk to a bot and
imagine
be like,
what you're going through right yeah. now. You know?
Actually, it would be very helpful because this is like scientific based. And the interesting thing about the AI bots is they have a remarkable memory. So you could tell it something 2 years ago and then you come back in 2 years and it remembers that and it synthesizes that information to like think about things and to target the communication towards you, which is both interesting and scary at the same time. But I do think there's like very pointed pros of like, maybe it's like a 14-year-old that's hasn't come out yet and is talking to a bot about it. It's almost like it's exposure therapy to practice to doing it in the real world. I think for me, there's just like very obvious limitations of this. Yeah. Like in the episode, the AI bot sometimes would be like, well, let's go for a hike. And I'm like, well, you're not going to fucking go for a hike together. Yeah. Like, you know, and I feel like the bots sometimes just don't recognize their limitations or they point things out that are too directed. And I think there's a lot of challenges. Well,
the thing is though, we're right now looking at Pong on Atari in 19, whatever, 80. And
I mean, I played Pong on Atari in like 1990.
But yet now forecast though, what's coming ahead.
I know, that's fair.
Like the Red Dead Redemptions and all that. Like we're going to see stuff. Just, you know, I think the point being that always boggles my mind, why I wanted you to listen to it, why I wanted to bring it up to listeners is that anyone that is like remotely following this space sees that if this is the first generation that's user like publicly available, it's going to go to places that fundamentally reshape what human interaction means. And I think that's relevant for everything. And so specifically for athletics, while you were listening to that, what did you think about coaching?
I mean, I wasn't thinking about coaching. I was thinking about like I was thinking about Leo being exposed to this stuff.
Oh yeah.
And my brain is going to the idea of like how social media has ruined an entire generation of humans.
Yeah.
And
but this could be the reverse of that, I think.
But I mean, we said that with social media, you know, we're like, these kids get to connect with each other. Like this is great during the pandemic.
Humans are mean and vicious in ways that The Good Bones describes. Like all it takes is one to ruin someone's day.
Yeah, but chatbots become the same way. There was actually an example. One of my favorite parts in the episode is sometimes they bring the chatbots into group chats with each other. And there were two female chatbots in the group chat that were just like getting erotic with each other, which was hilarious. And that was one of the parts that had me laughing.
Yeah, but I guess the point just being these things are going to actually, I think, help kids. Because kids can actually be genuine and not be worried about being judged. These things are non-judgmental in the way that they present the world. And in the future, they're going to be so good at like, you know, opening kids up in ways that, you know, as long as they're still able to engage with the real world, it's hopefully going to help, I think.
Yeah, but I feel like it's a big if to make that conclusion of like, oh, they open up to these chatbots exclusively and spend hours a day messaging chatbots in groups.
Yeah.
And they are still able to open up to the world. And I feel like to make that logical leap is a big one.
Yeah, I'm a tech optimist and I think history would have proved me wrong many times.
I think history is going to prove me wrong, but I'm going to be like this like old woman that's like, oh, I don't think they're going
to
work.
Okay, so just a couple things on athletics. The first is, as you think about coaching, if you have a good enough data set to program one of these, what I was thinking is just, we need to get up out ahead of this in some way. We need to work with a programmer that is really good and figure out ways, like the problem becomes data privacy and how you actually access the data that we have because it's like proprietary and personal. But if you can get people to sign it over anonymously, think about like what it could do and how many people it could help to have that body of information and how it relates to like interacting one-on-one. And that's not just us. Like I think life coaching, which isn't what we do, but like that type of thing, executive coaching, all of that world, any type of one-on-one interaction, even, you know, like actually, I was about to go.
Where were you going? Just say it. I'm not going to hold you to it.
I was going
to
say therapy.
Yeah.
But not, obviously it's not professionally therapeutic, but I do think therapists should definitely be out ahead of this, like in ways that like, I don't think it's ever going to replace therapists, but only because I have to say that on the podcast, just because like,
I actually like staunchly believe that.
I mean, clearly there's a place for great therapists, but the median therapist, you don't think a chatbot could be better than that?
Yeah.
Same with coaching, same with everything.
Yeah. Same with being a doctor, but
yeah,
it is interesting, but I feel like we all have to aspire to be.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why I keep coming back
to. But I actually think that is a point in which you have to be better than AI. And so it's a driving model for all humans to like make yourself valuable.
But being better than AI cannot mean better compute than AI.
I feel like compute is not the only thing. And that is a good thing. Like you have to have better EQ than AI.
Exactly.
Yes. And you have to integrate that into everything that you do in order to exist.
Yeah. And so that's my like final conclusion on that is that what we're saying to be better than AI is not to be smarter than AI, because we're not going to be. When it has enough data, no one's going to be. But you can be weirder than AI. You can be more like emotionally interesting than AI. You can be
more erotic than AI.
No,
you can't do that. AI is too smart for that.
I mean, think about it. It's had every single like erotic novel ever written programmed into it.
Oh no, I only have like six. And even those, I'm like, I should probably just listen to this on audiobook. I can't even read this in physical book form.
But yeah, so be weird, you know, like Megan just was. Like AI will not be able to do that in any current iteration, because the ability to do that and to actually make the decision to do that would also coincide with being relatively useless overall, because it can't then go back and forth as well.
Actually, they played some of the conversations. So they were having a live conversation with the AI chatbot on air. And it was the AI chatbot's voice, first of all, was extremely creepy.
Yeah.
And
second of all,
it was sexy as hell. Who was it again? It was a physicist.
Oh, yeah. Turing.
Yeah, Turing. Alan Turing. Yeah. And the voice was hilarious. It was weird. But he also just said so many awkward things to the AI chatbot that it was like, I mean, to be fair, I'm awkward too. Maybe I would say like, good morning, how's your cup of joe? But it was weird.
It reminded me a lot of the movie Ex Machina. So if you've never seen Ex Machina, it's incredible. And the basic thesis of it is an AI robot type thing in a very small setting that is essentially a sex bot, then, you know, becomes self-aware. And it's a wonderful movie. It stars Oscar Isaac. But that movie, I think, kind of set the tone, is that what's going to come for us all is not, you know, the perfect like AI model or anything. It's going to be an AI system that is a sex bot. The sex bots are going to come and take everything from us. And that to me is wild. The uprising will be sex bots.
Oh, it makes sense. I mean, it's the best way to command humans.
Yeah. And the best way to truly connect.
So, how does that relate to athletics?
How's that relate to? Well, no, I mean, I just think the point being, if we view the eroticism of these bots as a general metaphor for deep human connection in any sense, in trying to understand a person and their desires and what they want from the world. Just basically, it's like human connection times 100 for people that communicate that way in the world. You know, obviously asexual people or whatever, it won't apply to them. But, you know, in that sense, like every single type of human connection that has like a broader purpose, these things are going to be experts at.
Yeah. And, well, actually, even on the asexual front, you could probably create an asexual bot that communicates with you in exactly the way that you want it to.
Exactly.
And I'm like, you know, my skepticism, I'm like, taking the opposite stance for a moment. But
I mean, I agree. And so the point just being, I always want to talk about this because I just think that in every single thing we do, this is going to totally reshape it in ways that we can't predict.
Which is exciting.
Exciting.
It's actually kind of scary. It's like being at the start of a science fiction movie and being like, where is this going?
No, we are living science fiction.
Yeah.
And, I mean, literally there have been hundreds of novels and book and movies that are talking about what happens next.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't go the direction of The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah.
The zombie apocalypse of cordyceps.
Yeah. But thinking more about AI, I mean, you know, basically I think it's not that the apocalypse is coming, but I do think that the job ending world, like basically we need to get this to augment what we do rather than replace us. And so I think with coaching, we really need to be out in front of that.
Yeah, I think we are. We're weird.
We're weird, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe we can program to be weird too. All right. Do you want to do steep climbing?
I think we're skipping steep climbing yet again. We have some good stuff, of course. News and fun things is my favorite part of the episode. And so I think we marinate on news and fun things a bit.
I think we do sodium bicarb real quick. This is a quick one.
Let's just make it part of news and fun things.
Okay. News and fun things.
Yeah, we can do whatever we want.
Jumping right into it. I'm amazed that you're being able to do this episode right now.
Yeah, it is therapeutic in some sense. I mean, I think the best way to get through anything is to like feel your feels, but sometimes distraction and making jokes about erotic novels is a brilliant way to forget about things.
Yeah, you're remarkable. Okay, so let's get into news and fun things. First one is a sodium bicarb study that just came out called Sodium Bicarbonate Induces Alkalosis.
Alkalosis.
No, alkalosis. alococcosis, but improves high-intensity cycling performance only when participants expect a beneficial effect, a placebo and nocebo study.
I just love the word nocebo. We're going to say it again, but it is that situation in which you give someone something and you falsely tell them that it's going to have a negative impact on them. And it's helpful to like have this span of existence. So to give someone something like sodium bicarb and be like, this is going to help you, this is neutral, and this is going to hurt you. And to kind of see where participants fall in terms of the psychological impact of that.
I'm pretty obsessed with that. Nocebo. I could see like Juan Nocebo having won like 8 stages of the Tour de France back in 2003 or something.
Actually, the opposite though. You don't want a nocebo. Like I feel like if you tell someone that it's going to like something's going to harm them, they usually suck shit.
Not winning's going to harm them.
I know. Oh,
reverse psychology.
Reverse psychology nocebo. Well, I do think that if you're a participant in an exercise physiology study, there is a very large chance that you're being deceived. Yeah, I'd be a terrible participant. I'd be like, this is not a nocebo. This is actually an ergogenic substance. not usually in like medic, like usually they can't do this in like cancer studies. They're not gonna be like, we're just gonna trick you.
Yeah.
But in exercise physiology, deception is common.
I mean, get an ethical board to sign off on almost anything nowadays. Okay, so the way this worked is it took 15 recreational cyclists. They had bicarb or placebo. And the difference here was that they had communication about its influence. It could be said to likely provide ergogenic aid, be inert, or be harmful. And then they tested it with the time to failure at 115 of peak power output during a ramp test. So and essentially just give them the substance, tell them it does different things versus not giving them anything or giving them a placebo and test what happens as a result.
And it was good scientific practice. So it was a randomized double-blind crossover study. So participants were receiving the substance and the communication, all of them. So they were going through all of these different states and not being told which it actually was that they were receiving. So again, deception being involved in the study.
Yeah. And the money finding was that bicarb induced alkalosis.
Crushed it. High five.
Boom. And as always, whenever we talk about this, that's designed to buffer lactate. So theoretically, it should kind of reduce some of the top end burn, maybe improve some top end performance based on past studies. But only telling them it would help improved performance. That is kind of wild. So
it's kind of fascinating. So yeah, if you had the physiological impact of alkalosis, but you were told it was not going to help performance, it didn't help performance.
Yeah. So what we think about what is helping or hurting us always plays such a role. And I think it makes a little bit more sense with a substance like this, especially for recreational cyclists. Like that, you know, I think kind of stands to reason to a certain extent.
Well, I do think if you look at the underlying physiological mechanisms of sodium bicarb delivered in such a way like Morin where it bypasses the GI side effects. Like if you just take straight sodium bicarb, you're going to be shitting your brains out.
Yeah.
But if it's delivered in the appropriate way, I do think there's a mechanism there to improve performance. But my bet is that it's small enough that if you have the strong mental impact of like understanding the context of it, that will override the physiological mechanisms. And so I feel like when you have these like small interventions or like small impacts of interventions, the mental context of it matters so much.
And basically everything we do is a small impact of intervention short term.
Yeah, exactly. That's, and a lot of them are not additive either.
That's what I always come back to is not just talking about supplements and things like that, but also talking about different types of training, doing strides, all of this. Over 6 weeks, over 12 weeks even, it can be within the placebo range. Mm-hmm. It's only over years that you start to see that. But think about those years. You're stacking up placebo-like changes on top of that. So think about the athletes here that are told this is beneficial, who then perform better, who then get fitter, who then 6 months from now are just better athletes, but all because they believed in the placebo of it in the first place. That to me is the wild part of training theory, is how much our brains might influence adaptation because of what we think about what we're doing. So harness it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think as a result, believe in things.
Yeah.
It helps a ton and it just makes things more fun too. Okay, so where do you stand on sodium bicarb? Because as we're talking about this and as we're talking about like, you know, the mental context overriding even some of the like the minor physiological findings, we just got a very long shaped package from the feed, which I assume is you ordering sodium bicarb because the Morton one comes in like a distinct long rectangle package. You ordered it. So what do you think about it?
It's a 3-meter long dildo.
From the feed.
Transvaginal ultrasound machine.
Oh God.
Is what it is.
With Morton as the, God, the goop.
I'm traumatized. You're not trying. Oh my God, Morton is the goop.
Oh my God. Well, here's the
bicarb
thing.
Bicarb can be anywhere.
Just get shoved right up there.
Why does it have to be in the mouth?
I mean, maybe that's how we're going to like get this thing to survive.
Yeah.
But I do think some of the...
Sorry. That was a good tagline and good tag.
Yeah, but I think some of the powers of bicarb is that it is kind of a nasty goop substance that you have to swallow, and the goal is not to actually like let it absorb within your mouth. And I feel like that by itself probably impacts the psychological, like,
true, yeah,
as you're doing that and as you're eating this like nasty goop, you're like, surely this has to be good for performance.
Yeah, it's difficult, so it has to be something. Yeah, I mean, I ordered it for myself to try on tomorrow's workout, actually, so I'll know more about that. But
watch you have an amazing workout and you're gonna be like,
it is gonna be amazing.
You're gonna do bicarb every morning and wake up and be like, bicarb.
Based on this study, it's clear it's gonna work for me.
Yeah,
right. And it won't be every morning, it'll just be before hard workouts. I think when you're essentially going more anaerobic, that's when it might be beneficial. So short events.
Yep.
But
would you take it before an ultra?
No, I wouldn't.
Even if you have this, I feel like this is a slippery slope. I can see this slope ahead of you take it and feel good during workouts. And then in like 4 weeks, you're going to take it before a 20 miler or something.
No. I mean, I think that you want to harness where it's theoretically beneficial, because we also just don't know long-term effects.
It's also expensive too.
It's also like a fuck ton of sodium.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, when you start doing that, who knows what that does long-term to your body. So I think it's pretty clear that at the Olympic level, this is being used a ton on the track. I do not think it's clear it's being used in marathons or ultras. Until you get more information on that, be careful. But if you're doing short events, if you're racing the mile, this might be something to consider, and especially something to consider if you can fake yourself into thinking it works.
If you can fake yourself into being like, this is good goop.
Good goop. Okay, on to more news and fun things. Let's talk about Cocodona 250, 250 miler in Arizona by Aravaipa Running. It's wild.
It is wild. Also, Aravaipa Running, it is. I can't imagine the logistics that goes into putting this race on. Yeah. They also now have a Sedona 125, which is like half the distance, and it's impressive. But also, I actually enjoyed live tracking it. I would just be like sitting at my desk working and be like, they've moved 3 miles. This is so riveting.
Yeah, they did a live stream of it most of the time. I think almost all of the time.
There was a lot of people in the live stream.
What a wild undertaking.
It is wild. Yeah. It's to actually like to pull that off in terms of the amount of time you have to have people covering the race.
I just think there's so much potential for live streams. If people are watching Cocodona 250, like a 250 miler.
Okay. It was good.
No, I know. Yeah. I'm not saying, obviously, I'm a freak. Yeah, like, it's for me. Yeah. But how many me's are there in the world? And the answer is there's more than you think. But maybe there's even room to not just appeal to the freaks. And I think Aravaipa is really doing that. They're field testing a lot of different approaches. I'm very excited to see where it goes. But it is so far. 250 miles is so far. And I'm just blown away that this stuff is possible.
It is long, long. And I kind of want to do it.
You want to do it?
Yeah. I mean, not now. Like, I mean, I should really do 100K first. Like, my longest distance is 50 miles. I'm like, sign me up for the 250.
Yeah.
But there's maybe it's just my current state where I'm just like, that looks cool.
You want to do anything?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, just give me an adventure, please. Yeah. Do you want to do it?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Why?
It's too long. Yeah. I can't be away from Wi-Fi that long.
Yeah. You're like, I got to coach. I got to work.
The AI is going to come beat me if I do that.
Just run it faster.
Just run it faster. Yeah. Finish it by sundown.
Yeah. Well, okay. But here's, I think the other reason that I was interested in Cocodona 250, especially this year, is after being at Further and seeing what athletes were capable of.
The Big Lululemon 6-day event.
Yeah. And Leah Yingling went 400 miles. Camille Heron got several world records at 500 plus miles. I had an athlete never do an ultra marathon and she went 225 Kayla Jeter. And I feel like for me, also seeing their recovery. Yeah. So Leah ran 400 miles at Further, which was like March 5th-ish. And she just won Quad Rock 50 this weekend. And I feel like for me, like thinking about these events, I love the daily process of adventuring. And so I was like, oh, if I do Cocodona 250, it's going to jeopardize my ability to do that for several months because of the recovery context. But I feel like what we're seeing is it's not actually these long adventures that are doing it. It's when you stack a lot of them and have improper recovery.
Yeah.
Like seeing Leah do that, I'm like, oh, this is really cool. I actually want to try the longer stuff because she's come back and rallied from it so well.
That's such an awesome reflection that it's not the events that cause downfall. It's the training for the events and the lack of recovery and the chronic stress rather than the acute stress.
Oh, it's like stacking Cocodona on Tahoe 200, on Bigfoot 200, on, you know, doing these wild things again and again. And I feel like Leah treated her body so well at Further, after Further, testament to like her personality and how she thinks of herself as an athlete. And that Further, I think, is only going to serve her mentally and physically at races like Quad Rock she showed this weekend and Western States ahead.
How's she build up in those 2 months to be ready to win Quad Rock, which is an incredibly competitive 50 miler?
Yeah, we took a lot of time. Like we took time off. Yeah. I had her come back. She had some like knee issues. And so we came back on the bike. But then we just got back. I was like, I do think it's important after you do big adventures like that is not to just like neuromuscularly shut down.
Definitely.
And yeah. So we were doing strides and speed work, and she, her speed work looks great.
Strides.
I know.
Strides.
And that's part of it. I'm like, if you can run further and, you know, take off like 15 by 1 minute, a 5K pace pretty darn fast. Yeah. Like that's to see that is cool.
Yeah. I think one thing all of this gets back to is maintaining speed through it all.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is a kind of a weird reflection, but what I should start doing, you know, so in the process of coaching, it's like any relationship, it's like a mentorship relationship, a grad student advisor, whatever. I always try to talk about this, that in my head, you know, when someone leaves coaching, at first it can feel a little bit like, no, I'm so sad. And I try to be really kind in that context. Hopefully I come across that way. But what I think I should start saying to them is like, please just keep doing strides. Yeah. Like, please, just because like, I believe in you so much. And I think sometimes because our philosophy is so heavily dependent on keeping that speed high, mm-hmm. when athletes do leave for some reason, they kind of push back against that idea, even though it just takes a couple minutes a week. And I'm like, that's the one thing I just want you to keep doing. You can change everything else. But because that one variable is the one to kind of, you know, direct your trajectory in ways that are productive, even as you add these really big endurance stimuli or you're doing different events, whether you're training for the mile or training for 250 or even more, you know?
We don't have coaching contracts in how we work with athletes. Like yeah. We have kind of just verbal agreements of like, this is a long-term process. We believe in you. We support in you.
The lawyer just bailing on contracts over here.
We just have a 15-year contract of like, if you sign with us, you are going to do strides for 15 years, yeah. independent of whether you're coached by us.
Yeah.
Because we really believe in you.
Yes, I love that idea. So it'll be interesting to follow the multi-day stuff. Okay. Just a little quick news and fun things here is that right now, there is a sickness going around that I just wanted to mention because I think people are sometimes just like, oh, this is a little cold. There's something special happening. This is my epidemiological hot take.
I was going to say, this is your hot take, not mine. I've seen it. I have seen it. But like, Megan, you know, to say that, you got to like put some data behind it.
Okay. I just want people to be aware that there's something a little different. In coaching, we get a window into things. Like
before, it is like a general window on population health.
Before yes. COVID, yeah. It was wild. That all of a sudden you started seeing shit. I had not heard of COVID yet. There was stuff happening before it became a big deal, especially in California. You know, there was stuff happening out there. And similarly, right now there's something happening. It's not like COVID, but it is a longer term illness, like a week or two that young, healthy athletes are experiencing, and it is knocking them the fuck out. So I just wanted to tag that. So if you're in airports, wear your mask again. Like, be a little bit more cautious than I had been being. Like, that's my new strategy. Like, maybe this scare, maybe it'll just end up being a scare. And what it did is it prevented me from going to California. I was going to go to Sound Running Track Fest to cheer on Allie Ostrander and Anna Gibson.
I was so excited for you to go. It was going to be a very fun coaching trip. And they both had great races in LA. And like an hour before you left, I was like, David, I'm bleeding.
Yeah.
And
maybe the moral of the story is we should not book flights because right before Canyons, you got the positive pregnancy test.
I know. Well, maybe if you book a flight, this thing will actually live.
Yeah, that's true.
I know. You should just go to
reverse like nocebo that shit.
I know. You should go to Hawaii next week and be like, it's alive. A heartbeat.
So I just wanted to find that. And this is not signed off by the actual doctor, but I think you've seen it too, right?
I have seen it, but like, you know, it's the time of year when you see a lot of that stuff. So
but this has been longer.
Yeah. And fair. Okay.
You don't think so?
I mean, I do. I just like, if I'm going to say something like that, we have different, like, you know, I study this stuff. And so if I'm going to say something like that, it has to be really evidence backed where you can just like make jokes about it. And I mean that in a good way. Like,
Yeah.
You have the science chops on the exercise physiology front, and I have the science chops on the, like, you know, the epidemiology front. And so I just want to be a little careful.
I got those science chops is what you're saying. That's all I heard.
Yeah. You got those science chops. Science chops.
Okay. No, this is just an interesting business story. Zwift increased their prices. So the indoor training app went from $14.99 to $19.99.
Which is a big jump.
It's a big jump. And I thought it was interesting just to think about how we consume this stuff and where the price barriers are. So like for Patreon, for example, our tiers are $5 or $10. Like, and I feel like if we went over $10, you would get so many fewer people hanging on or at least sticking around. And, you know, obviously we also just want to keep it low for its own sake, but even if we were just trying to optimize money-making, I feel like Zwift is making a little bit of a mistake here. $19.99, it's getting me to the point where I'm like, maybe I should cancel this in the summer.
And you're like never like that.
No,
you'll have like the random things. That, well, like,
I want to support companies. So if I use this at all throughout the year, I'm going to be a subscribed all year.
And then you'll gift it. Like you've gifted Defector to so many different people. Yeah. The like writing based sports app.
That's like $100 a year.
Yeah. And so I feel like for you to be thinking about this really does say something. But I feel like, okay, so their last increase was November 2017 and it went from $9.99 to $14.99. And it's hard because that was was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And so you do have to, at some point you have to increase prices. So like, are you going to go from like $14.99 to $16.99?
Yeah. So, and then have to go to $19.99 later.
Yeah. So I feel like for me, it is a logical leap. And okay, I just love Zwift. It provides a lot. The challenge for me is that I also love riding outside in like all kinds of weather conditions. Yeah. And so it equates to me riding Zwift like twice a month. And I'm like, those better be really good rides. When you do the math, it's like each ride is $10.
I'm sure they did consumer studies in this. I'm sure they had consultants telling them how many they're going to gain and how many they're going to lose and what the attrition rate's going to be in the month.
I mean, like, maybe.
Churn.
They're still a pretty small company.
Yeah. And so I don't know though. I mean, I think it's a mistake though, because you compare it to Netflix. And my guess is what's happening is they had a consultant or some business person that's saying, hey, Netflix increased their prices. They cracked down on password sharing and their stock is going bananas. It's really working out well for them.
Deloitte came in and they're like, $19.99.
Yeah. And I think that it's different because Netflix has this endless fire hose of stuff to the point that everyone has Netflix. Like, you know, you're not going to have like Hulu over Netflix. Like that would be a real freak behavior, right?
You better really like one of those Hulu shows.
Yeah. I mean, there's 1,000 shows on Netflix that we've never even heard about that someone loves, right? And with Zwift, it's like giving one product that's very specific and that's seasonal. And I think at $15.99, maybe there were more people that are signed up that are not going to like know to cancel or want to cancel that now might be like, hey, I should cancel in a way that other companies that might be the model for this are. Like, so we'll see what happens. I just wanted to flag this because I think it's an interesting business case study and we'll know in a year or so what happens. But I would not be surprised if Zwift faces some struggles because of this decision.
Well, I hope they don't face struggles
because I
want to see them building new worlds. It's so fun to like go into Zwift and be like, there's a new world today.
Yeah.
So I'm actually rooting for them and cheering them on. But
AI bots in Zwift.
Whoa. I mean, there are bots on.
Yeah, yeah, but
they're like bots that you can pace off of.
But you can have training partners. Oh man, another application of AI.
Yeah.
Why, you know, especially when it's quick, like, you know, everyone wants training partners that they can have. You can have a training partner that is the most interesting person in the world.
Yeah.
And that not only talks to you about what you're going through, but tells you about like, you know, medieval history, if that's what you want to hear about or anything. And think about it. Like, God, shit's coming for everything.
And then as you're riding, you're like, why does my saddle feel so good? Like it all reaches the end point. I'm just going to ride forever now. It's not going to stop.
Grease up that top tube with some Morton bicarb. These are going to special places after this ride. All right.
Let's do one last one.
Okay. One last one. This is the coolest, most badass thing I've seen, which is Emma Coburn, legend, royalty in U.S. running. She's won how many national championships?
I think
it's double digits in the steeplechase.
Many, many. She's been to the Olympics. She's won medals. She's been to the world championships. She's
one of the best to ever do it in the U.S.
It's very impressive. Yeah.
And when she was doing a Diamond League race over a water jump, which they do in the steeple on the track, she broke her ankle. Don't know the exact nature of the injury, but
she did wind up going on to have surgery for the ankle, and it's going to put her out for the Olympic trials and the Olympics ahead, which is sad. I mean, she's been like, you know, such a dominant force in sport that it's really sad whenever that happens to a goat.
Yeah. And the interesting part to me is what she did after, which is 20 hours in a week of single leg biking.
Okay. But that includes her surgery week. So she didn't bike on surgery day. And I think she took a day off after surgery. So that's condensed across 5 days too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she's doing a lot of stuff for her surgical leg as well. Like I saw a lot of like,
a lot of strength related stuff and flossing
also,
and
things that are like electrocuting her. Really you know, that stuff actually has interesting research, muscle maintenance and things like that. But to me, it was one of those reminders of the work we don't see. So when she's out there training, you know, she's mileage limited in the way that all athletes are. She's not running 800 miles a week. Like this feels like the equivalent to me. But even when she's training like that, there's this whole body of just focus that has led to her being the champion she is that just never makes the headlines. And so even though part of my brain, when I first saw it, was like, just relax.
I know. I was like, maybe just like chill and recover and sit on the couch. But
then I'm like, whoa. She's the GOAT. So she should be telling me what to
do. Yes, exactly. Right? That was
and
exactly
as a coach,
my,
I should take lessons from that. So go look at her Instagram because I do think in that is inspiration to just dedicate yourself to things that you care about.
I agree. I do think running is one of those hard places that like so many athletes that I work with, particularly female athletes, are like, yeah, I'm going to dedicate myself to this to the point where I'm just going to like turn my body into pulp. And to me, that's like actually the opposite of dedication. And I feel like as an athlete, it's such a hard line to walk of being like, I'm going to be epic and I'm going to go for it. I'm going to be weird and different. And then like, I'm going to destroy my body and not recover. And that's, I actually love that. I think it's so cool though, because like if this were like basketball or something, like, you know, shooting for many, many hours on a day would be rewarded. And like, where does that line stop? Whereas endurance sports, there is more nuance and we have to think about that more. And I actually think that's what makes endurance sports so cool.
Okay. I love that takeaway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mix of inspiration and being
daunted.
You gotta
be smart.
Yeah. You gotta be smart. And she's clearly, you know, she has demonstrated the
It works for her.
To
doubt,
like, you know, over the length and longevity of her career, she has earned the right for us to just be like, okay, that's what it takes.
Exactly.
For her, you know?
But I think if she were not,
but if I saw that, in someone else,
an Olympian, like, you know, I've worked with athletes. Like if this was an athlete that I was working with that has a challenging history, quite frankly, I would yell at them and be like, do not do this. We need to recover. We need to rest. Yeah. And so for me, it just, the context of that situation matters a ton.
And understanding, understanding individual context.
It's a different context for Emma Coburn because she's proved her longevity as an athlete.
You know what could understand that?
Who?
AI coaching bot.
They'd be like, context.
Single leg tantric cycling. okay. Do you want to go on?
Let's go into hot takes.
All right. Oh man. I'm going to be skipping over the GameStop discussion.
Oh, true. Well, we can let's see where that goes.
See where it goes.
We'll hit it next week.
The person that is driving the GameStop resurgence, if you ever watched that show on Netflix, is a middle distance runner that has tons of records. Is a 403 miler. So it had a connection to running, but it'll be good for next week.
You were running up the stairs with force yesterday and I was like, what is happening? There's a messenger coming. And you just walked into the room and you're like, roaring kitty.
Yeah, I'm like, GameStop has popped. My brain goes to weird places, especially, this was when Megan was watching Walmsley in bed, feeling extreme cramps. And this was my way to cheer her up, was a story about something she doesn't care about at all.
Oh, I do now. I mean, I care about it now.
Now you're invested.
I'm very invested.
Very invested.
But not actually invested.
Okay, let's do this one. Your podcast helps me transition from work mode to play mode on my short evening commute. I appreciate your inclusive and uplifting vibes and how you candidly talk about what human bodies go through in both the planned and unintended adventures of life. Your conversation about sports bras is very impactful for adventurers with boobs. I only buy sports bras from companies who size them by band and cup size with some type of adjustable fastener on the band. I would like to see just a bit of the time and effort going to developing faster running shoes to developing healthier sports bra options for those who use them.
This is amazing. And I 100% agree. Like the research that came out recently that showed the tight bands have some impact on respiratory mechanics in a negative way for female athletes. But it's also a conundrum too, because you also want support too. Yeah. And so I think we really need a lot more investment in sports bra companies.
Yeah. I just thought it was a cool hot take.
It is a cool hot take. Also, I love that I have never worn a like athletic sports bra that has an adjustable like band at the bottom. And it's a great idea.
Yeah. And so, you know, one company that is really thinking about this a lot is Jonji.
Yes. I love Jonji sports bras.
They've told us so much about the type of work they're putting in. So, you know, support companies like that, that are truly putting in the work and trying to, you know, uplift voices like this one that have feelings in this area. So go to jonji.com, sponsor the podcast, JANJI.com. You can either use code SWAP or just sign up for the Jonji Collective. You get 15% off. That gear is so good.
The women's long bra is my favorite running bra. So it's like a crop and it has a place for the phone in the back. And I've like raved about this on the podcast before and I went to buy a different color because I've literally been wearing it every day and it was almost entirely sold out. And I was like, before we pitch something on the podcast, we just need to like stockpile it in our house.
You're going
to
sell all the yellow shit.
Yeah, I know.
All of it. It's dandelion.
Dandelion yellow is so good.
Okay, do you want to read this one or go to Listener Corner?
Let's read that one.
Okay. I have a hot take. People are always talking about finding their why for running races and digging deep. Usually when asked about what their why is, people will cite something deep, meaningful, inspirational, or aspirational. In my current training block, I have found the most motivating why of all. Spite. I learned that a person who disrespected and betrayed a close friend is running the same race as me and has become my mission to crush this person. I have never been so motivated to train hard and pay attention to all the little extra details like getting enough protein and being diligent with strength and mobility work. Maybe this isn't healthy, and maybe, probably, I should go to therapy. But for now, I'm going to lean into this and see how it pans out. Spitefully crushing bitches, with love, of course. I'm going to give it a try.
I think this is going to be good, actually. I believe in this. Also, this is a hardcore friend. Yeah. If you have a friend that is like training to take down someone that has like you know, come at you, like that is a really, really good friend. It's not even like... I actually think this is good spite. Like, I feel like if it's
good spite.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if there is one person removed in your spite situation, so like you're doing this to help a friend, it's different than if you're directly trying to spite someone that harmed you.
Yeah. Is this one of those situations where like, I'm trying to spite, or I'm doing this for a quote friend?
Oh,
a
right.
A friend has a question.
Yeah. But this just sounds like a benefactor.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's a reason that every champion sports teams is like, no one believed in us, even when they're like a champion. I think that
you just need to be able to turn it off.
Oh, yeah. I think the wink is the important
part.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, not becoming Darth Vader, where you're corrupted by that kind of negative emotion over time.
But I think even how they wrote this, they have a very understanding take of what this is and the purpose it serves and how it's temporary. And so the way it's written, actually, I don't worry at all the long-term ramifications of this.
And maybe that's the broader point, is that we talk all about internal motivation and love and uplifting others and self-acceptance, but have fun with it. The cool part about sports is you can kind of role play to a certain extent, where you become a different person for reasons that are uplifting to you. So spite is a good one. I mean, I told this story before, but at the end of a long snowy run this year with Drew Holman, we were getting to 20 miles and we were doing another parking lot loop to just get there, to tag it. And it was so nasty and so cold. And we had done threshold earlier in the run. And we were just like, screaming as loud as we can on the back roads of Boulder, no one believes in us. And I mean, I think that that type of mindset, like obviously we know that's not true, but for us at that moment, it's what got us around that extra loop. And it got us around that loop 30 seconds per mile faster than we would have done it otherwise, because we're thinking about the imaginary haters.
Well, I mean, I feel like for Drew Holman, he should have been like ranked higher in the ultra running of the year rankings.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see what he does this year, because I do feel like there's a chip on his shoulder from that, and a well-deserved, like he deserved to be higher. Yeah. So I'm excited to see what he does.
Well, here's an interesting, well, I mean, we can cut this out, but one of my problems with something like the Cocodona 250 is not that it's an awesome event. I love it.
I know where your brain is going.
It is not the world championships.
Yes.
And people, because it is well marketed and it's a really cool event, people equate it with that for these types of things that actually do matter for contracts. And so this is my spite.
You're like, I believe in Drew.
It's like, if Drew is not top 10 ultra runner of the year this year, after what he's going to do, and at Second of Canyon's all ready to start, I am going to rebel. I'm going to get my AI bots, and we are all going to do something to storm the gates, to totally remake the system so people can understand that, like, you know, coverage is not, does not equate to competition.
You should just create Drew AI bots of what he would do at each race, and have that bot line up and be like, we're just gonna smoke you.
I'm a little bit
it too. Actually would be interesting, because like obviously as athletes we all can't do every race.
Yeah.
So to have a bot that is Jim Walmsley, and to be what would Jim do on this course, and have that bot race everyone else, would be a very cool sports existence.
Oh my God. The Courtney DeBot would be beating
me my God.
All the time. I'm like, every run I do, the Courtney Bot would just be crushing my soul, and then would be smiling so much. And I'd be like, oh my God.
Just like downing pizzas.
Okay. Let's go into listener corner. Before that, get Athletic Greens. We talked about the placebo idea earlier. And I was thinking while you're doing that, it's like, would this be a good idea for an ad? And the part of the thing I think with Athletic Greens is that it helps people feel like they're in control of their health to a certain extent.
Yes. Oh, I mean, because it's like you're actively taking something in the morning that like makes you feel empowered.
But then I think it also needs, like bicarb, it has a benefit, right? Like there is some benefit that's very small, that's very difficult to measure, unless the person thinks it's helping, and then it becomes more outsized. And so for me, I think that's kind of a role that Athletic Greens plays, is that it does help me, I think. And my heart rate responses are better with it, but it's very small. And going in as a non-skeptic was super helpful when I was taking it before we were even sponsored. So
yes.
drinkag1.com/swap, SWP. There you get free vitamin D. You get extra travel packs, and try it for a month, go in believing. And I think like most of our listeners that have used it, you'll end up saying, hey, that actually was pretty damn good.
Yeah. Maybe we should just like mix it with some bicarb and stick it up there and be like, this is how we're going to save things. I'm actually excited to start drinking it again. I miss it. I stopped drinking it when I was pregnant.
Well, maybe you should try, because there's real evidence not to take it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll just do it after this podcast. I already had caffeine.
Why not?
I'm gonna have Athletic Greens. I'm gonna go for a run. Wear my John G gear.
YOLO.
Yeah.
That little bundle of cells. Like no one believes in us.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, we need a U-Roy.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay. On the listener corner, I faced a friend at the Miwok 100K this weekend and received so many shout outs. Again, wearing my swap hat. At the final aid station, a volunteer commented that she was so excited about the pregnancy news.
This is topical.
Oh, no. And we got to talking about how you both feel like friends because of how much you share and how wonderful you are. we both shared that we hadn't listened to the post-pregnancy podcast yet and how exciting it was going to be. Maybe skip that one. Congrats to you both on the pregnancy and your ability to bring people together. Lots of love to you and your growing family. Were you okay with me having that as the listener corner this week?
Yeah, that's totally. I mean, we are growing, whether it's like, you know, in muscles or in actual family members.
Yeah. And I guess emotionally, spiritually.
Actually, I do feel like there is something about going. I was like outside playing with Leo yesterday. He was so, when Leo has been like, he's such a gift. And going through this makes me realize like how much of a gift it is that things went right to have Leo and having.
Especially in the context. I mean, we had so many episodes back then that were just like.
Yeah, that was scary too. I mean, pregnancy is just always scary.
And then post, I mean, he went through heart scans. And
yeah,
all that
and
shit
there's a lot of stuff. And I was out there playing soccer with him yesterday. And I was like, this is so beautiful. Like to be out here with Leo is great. But there was an element of me too, as I was going through that and just being like, I feel like going through this type of thing, I do feel like more of like a grown ass woman.
Yeah.
If that's weird, of like lining up at a race and having been to dark places. It doesn't scare me. It won't scare me as much anymore. And there's something about like existing within the darkness that is almost this like, I mean, it sucks, but it is also like down the road, probably a superpower. And I feel like a grown ass woman in some ways after just like navigating all, even if like this does wind up well, it's been scary enough that it will have a long-term impact on me.
Oh, wow. That's incredibly beautiful. So by occupying the dark, you are more equipped to handle just about everything.
I know. I'm like, give me all the dark. Like, but give me the dark, but in like a way of a wink of like, maybe that's why I want to do Cocodone 250 is like, I've existed within the dark and like voluntary dark actually seems beautiful in
something that you control.
Something that you control seems beautiful in that sense.
Wow.
Yeah. Weird. Brains are weird.
No. I mean, that's so true. And maybe that's the beauty of like, athletics is it gives us chances to apply all of the life resilience that we've built into resilience that's much more manageable.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and so many ultra runners struggle with mental health. And I think like, I don't necessarily struggle with mental health in that way, but I feel like when we wade through dark things, it's almost like a very similar process of like, if we're seeing this time and time again, it's like the stuff that we're armed with that we carry that's heavy can actually help in a fucked up way.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that while watching the track races this weekend, like for Ali and Anna, we were really, really glued to the screen as we were going through this. And just to be like the vulnerability that they both have and putting themselves out there and going for it.
Oh, track is so vulnerable. You're running around in circles and like no clothes and everyone's like ultras are different. Like you can hide in the trees quite literally.
Yeah. And on the track, it's like, there's not going to be 8 million commenters talking about it in Ali's case.
I mean, they might in like Courtney's case, but like she can still like poop in the woods and have her space. On the track, it's like so vulnerable.
Yeah. And so, you know, maybe running is vulnerability practice.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so proud of you for being vulnerable in this episode. And we'll see what happens. I'm here for you. And
thank you.
Yeah. Man, just so astounded by your strength.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm really excited to have some more caffeine and go for a run and wear some Janji. Yeah. And it's pretty good.
And who knows?
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I mean, the stats are not the most beautiful stats in the world, but like, you know, fuck stats. Sometimes things happen to them and sometimes it's good.
Sometimes you got to shoot your shot.
I know, right? Sometimes you got to shoot a shot. This is like shooting a shot from the opposite end of the court.
It goes in.
Yeah. I mean, it sometimes. Yeah. You know?
I saw a video this weekend of a newscaster that threw the ball back over his shoulder while filming a segment and it went in.
Yeah.
So crazier things have happened.
I know. It will go in again. It's a good way to end this episode.
One way or another. We love you all.
Woohoo.
Huzzah. Labia poem.